Hello, this is Jesse Liberty, and this is yet another podcast. Today we're going to be talking about Knockout.js. We have Steve Sanderson, who works for Microsoft on the ASP.NET team and is the creator of Knockout.js. We've got John Papa, independent developer and author of the Pluralsight course on Knockout. And we've got my sometimes partner, John Galloway. Gentlemen.
Hi.
How you doing?
How are you all?
All very well. Thank you very much.
So, Steve, I'm going to ask you to start by setting the context about Knockout. Can you give me a quick overview of what Knockout.js is and what it's for?
Yeah, sure. Okay. Well, one way I could explain it is to say it's a model view view model library for JavaScript, but that would be kind of a boring explanation. So what would be more interesting would be to just explain why it exists, really. Increasingly, our web applications are becoming more sophisticated on the client. You know, we've been through the whole sort of Ajax era a few years ago, and we're coming out now into an age of people having many devices, particularly different mobile devices, different operating systems being prevalent, and still a need to build sophisticated applications that run across all of these different kinds of devices. One of the ways that people are solving this is, of course, by doing them as web applications. And that then leads to the need for technologies to build bigger, more interesting applications in a cleanly organized way. So one of the ways that people approach that kind of challenge is by adopting some kind of UI structuring architecture like model view controller or model view view model running in the browser. And so Knockout is an implementation of that MVVM pattern in JavaScript, which means that you can set up a model for the objects and data that you're working with and implement that in a nice sort of object-oriented way. And then you can also set up views in a declarative kind of way with HTML, and then you can bind all these things together. So it gives you some nice separation of concerns between your models and your views, and provides a bit of other sort of guidance and utilities for building these kind of rich applications.
And is it the Knockout framework that creates the binding?
So Knockout provides a few main pieces of infrastructure. One of them is this concept of observability and dependency tracking. So that is a way of setting up your data in such a way that different parts of your data can relate to each other. So, for example, you might have data relating to an order that a customer's making, and from that you want to know, say, the total value of the order. And you've got some rule for computing the total value by iterating over the lines and adding them up and counting for discounts and things like that. And if you set up your data such that the different parts of it are observable, then you can set up the links there, and that kind of happens implicitly. So if your algorithm for calculating a total order value involves iterating over all the lines, then the framework automatically detects that dependency and is going to keep the total value part up to date, even when the lines collection changes or the value or the quantity on the lines change. So that's quite a powerful way of basically setting up relations among your data and not having to manage it. And then secondly, Knockout provides various UI services so that you can bind these bits of observable data to your visible user interface. So you could have, for example, a span element in your HTML that's bound to the total value property of your model, and then that will display the value in your UI. And then if anything inside the order, like any of the quantities or discount levels change or whatever, then Knockout will automatically know that it has to recompute the total value and redisplay the relevant part of the UI. So Knockout's bindings keep things in sync.
And John, you created about 5 hours of training on Knockout. What do I need to know before I look at that training? What skills do I need to have for that training to even make sense to me?
That's a good question. So before you get into doing Knockout, some basic things you probably want to assume are knowledge of JavaScript in general. A little bit of knowledge of jQuery is helpful, while not essential. There's a couple of jQuery things that are really helpful to use with it. But basic knowledge of how JavaScript works is great. And for those coming from a XAML background, Silverlight or otherwise, I think actually transitions really much easier. And I think that was part of the intention that Steve had when he created it, although we can ask Steve.
To be honest with you, I have not done any serious Silverlight or XAML development. The background historically in my head when I was creating it was more to do with MVC. because I've invented numerous MVC for JavaScript libraries over the years, none of which were really successful as open source projects. But it was that experience that led through a kind of understanding of MVVM, which I picked up as when people started talking about that in about 2006 or something. So it certainly does relate to that.
Yeah, I think that's just a lot of, at least that's where I came from as well. I was doing a lot of MVC years ago, and I kind of progressed into other patterns like MVP and then MVVM. And I really like the combination. You can actually do ASP.NET MVC with Knockout. Although when I've done my presentations lately, I've actually found it easier to first just show Knockout without any server side, without any MVC, and just show that you can do it, you know, whether you're using a Linux server or any kind of server, quite frankly. And then, of course, the questions come, does it work with ASP.NET MVC? And, of course, the answer is yes. It's really irrelevant what you use in the server. It's more of a client-side technology that you can interact with.
Which brings up an interesting question. Do you see, obviously it's a good fit for people who are using MVVM and, you know, are in the Microsoft world. Do you see a lot of pickup, or do you see people using it in the broader web community?
Yeah, we do see that. Yeah. If you go on the Knockout forum, you'll find a lot of people talking about what they're doing with it on Rails quite popularly. There are some people doing it on PHP, not as much as on Rails. And then other people on Node.js as well. Node.js is, of course, very interesting because it's JavaScript on the server as well there. So there's some level of crossover between model objects being the same actual, you know, class structures, if you can call it that, on the server as well as on the client. If I was to estimate, I would say probably 50% or more of people using Knockout are using one of the ASP.NET technologies on the server. And that's probably mainly just because the kind of exposure that it's had has been mainly within the Microsoft communities.
And that's the interesting thing. It's a good thing and it's a bad thing in a way, because when I go through a lot of the Knockout demos for people, a lot of people just assume that it's made for ASP.NET MVC in general, and that kind of just ties into those. But I really try to go out of my way to point to people that you really doesn't matter how you work with this. It doesn't matter what's on that server side again. But a lot of the questions, you go up in Stack Overflow or you go into the forums on Steve's site, which I think you use through Google. There are quite a few questions on there that have nothing to do with ASP.NET. So it's pretty interesting how wide of an adoption it's had.
Yeah, and it doesn't have special features in it for ASP.NET. The only platform-specific feature it has actually is for Rails. So at least goes to show that it's not purely designed for ASP.NET. But generally, it's designed to be agnostic to what's on the server.
And that's one of the reasons. Yeah, and I say that's one of the reasons when people ask me, well, how does this differ? I'm an MVC developer. Why would I want to use this when I could just create models with Razor and such? And I say the first thing I point to them at is, well, it's because you don't have to use ASP.NET if you don't want to as well. You can do a lot of this stuff on the client, and you're not tied to MVC. So I get a lot of people coming in who think that it only works one way.
Well, let's talk about a little bit about how it does work. Can you draw for me a mental picture of what adding Knockout to my JavaScript is like?
Yeah, sure. Okay, so traditionally, a web application is based on server-side HTML rendering. So obviously, your browser hits the server and it comes back with some HTML page, then the user follows links or submits forms or whatever. And then stepping forwards to about 2004 or something, when people started doing a lot of AJAX, people were doing AJAX requests, and then a couple of years later, jQuery became the dominant paradigm for that. And so then basically it's more or less the same, except for you've got a lot of dollar signs in your JavaScript and a lot less nasty code. But all of that is still very server-centric and still generally relies on the server rendering most of the HTML and the browser being relatively indifferent to what's going on. So when you bring in something like the MVVM pattern, and the same is true of other technologies that use things like MVC in the browser, probably the biggest conceptual difference is having a separation between your models and your views in the browser, so that the browser has actually got some raw data representation of what's going on and not just markup. And that way, when you are writing your code, you're not just manipulating DOM elements and adding attributes and CSS classes and event handlers and such like, but you've got an actual representation of the model data that can be manipulated on its own and then separately represented in UI. And for that to work architecturally, it's quite normal on the server to have some endpoint that can return raw data, so usually JSON data. So a URL probably implemented in quite a RESTful kind of schema where you can the browser can hit that URL and get back, for example, the orders for a certain customer in raw JSON format, or you know the recommended purchases to go with a given product or something. And then on the browser, we maintain that data structure in its own right, and we can bind that to the visible user interface using declarative attributes. So it's kind of templating, really, on the client to transform that data into visible UI. But in the Knockout case, it goes quite a long way beyond templating because it's a two-way process. It's not just you take your data and convert it to HTML, but rather you activate the data on your HTML in such a way that it's bound in both directions. So as the user starts manipulating form controls or clicking buttons and such like, that's going to mutate your data model or run code on your view models. So it's kind of bidirectional thing there. Does that make any sense? Can I clarify it?
It does make sense, but please feel free to go on and expand upon it.
Well, what would you say, John and John? Is that a good explanation, or how would you put it?
No, I think that's good. This is John with an H. When I try to do when I show Knockout is I actually talk about jQuery a little bit as far as the demo. And we have the advantage of being visual when we're in a presentation, obviously, over a podcast. So I usually throw up a couple screenshots of some code of, let's say you've got some screen that's got 40 data elements on it and you want to pull them out of your JSON and load it on the screen. Here's the code that you might write with jQuery. And then somebody presses save, here's the code you might use to pull it out of those data elements and back into your object to send across using AJAX. That may be 40 lines of jQuery to pull it and 40 lines to push it back in. And then with Knockout, I show how you don't really need all that code to do that in JavaScript and jQuery. You can just set up the data bindings to do that, and I show how much simpler it is and the advantages that you get, because it's not just the one-time push and one-time pull. Steve's got a lot of good hooks in Knockout where as the elements change, they dynamically notify down to the target, between the target and the source, so you can have your two-way bindings hooked up. So it's actually a nice, quick, and easy way to show people, look, if you write on this jQuery now, with Knockout, you can simplify that too.
John Galloway, does this tie in at all with Web API and MVC4?
I guess the one way it would, and Steve would be the person to talk about this more, is a single-page application.
Yeah, absolutely. I've just been in at the Tech Days events in Belgium and the Netherlands last week doing some talks about this, actually, which you can find on the Channel 9 website right now. I'll try and get you the link so that can go up on the blog post with this. But yeah, so we've been working in the ASP.NET team for about the last sort of 6 months or something on coming up with a useful approach to single page applications on ASP.NET. So this is the bit where we take the good stuff in Knockout, which is not specific to any particular server-side technology, and then provide a really streamlined way of making use of it on ASP.NET. And what we've done is thought about the components that are needed to build a single page application, by which we mean an application that renders its own user interface, does client-side navigation, and knows how to synchronize data with the server. And we've come up with a few pieces to make all that work. And as you just alluded to, the piece that exposes data from the server is Web API, which as of last week we announced has been merged in with ASP.NET MVC. So they ship as the same product now. When you're doing an MVC4 application, you've got Web API in it. And so you just have to create a very small controller class, and you can expose your data in a nice RESTful kind of way in JSON or XML formats or whatever format you like. So that gets data on and off the server in very little code. And then you need a way of connecting to that from the client in order to actually access it. And we've got this new JavaScript library called Upshot.js, and that is a rich data access library for JavaScript. And the benefits that provides on top of just regular AJAX requests is that it knows how to keep track of changes that you've made to your data so that it knows how to synchronize those changes back. And it can handle relatively sophisticated scenarios, like where you've got a whole graph of objects and you add child entities and move entities to different parents, and then you delete some entities and things like that. And it will watch what you're doing and build up a whole change set. And then it knows how to synchronize that back to Web API and get so that it will all go into your database without you having to figure out what inserts and updates and things like that to do. And it's got other benefits as well, like it understands .NET model metadata for things like validation, and it knows how to do queries against the server, and it can even run queries locally. If you've got all the data on the client, it can evaluate things like sorting and filtering without even talking to the server. And once you've got all that, you've got a really rich data model on the client that can synchronize with the server. At that point, you can layer Knockout on top of that to build a visible user interface in a very declarative kind of way. So we've got a little library, a sort of compatibility layer that sits on top of Upshot and knows how to expose the data in a way that Knockout can deal with through its observables. So when you've got this whole sort of stack of things chained together, it becomes really trivial to have data flowing down from the server into the client and being bound to the user interface. And then as the user makes changes in the UI, those changes flow back up to the server. So it's really convenient.
And are you finding, Steve, that people are embracing the Knockout combined with Upshot idea?
Well, this information was only brought to light last Wednesday, so people are still getting, used to it. And we've not even published any sample code for this yet, because we're kind of working furiously on getting the release out onto NuGet. So the feedback so far has been extremely positive, but, people haven't had an opportunity to try it in their real projects yet because we just haven't got the code to them yet. So this is really new information.
Let me roll you back. Can you define Upshot just a little bit more and flesh out what that is?
Yeah. So it's a data access library. It's a way of having something on the client that knows how to talk to the server to fetch data. And once it has fetched that data, it knows how to track any changes that you've made and synchronize it back. And it can also do other kind of data-related stuff, like knowing what validation metadata is defined on that, so that you can then bind those validation rules into your user interface.
A lot of these guys in the Upshot team, they came from the Silverlight RIA services team, if I remember correctly. Is that right, Steve?
That is correct, yeah. So, the reason why Web API and MVC as a whole have been merged together is because they're tackling similar areas, really. The Web API is a way of exposing data onto the web, and MVC is obviously kind of tackling a superset of that problem. So it made sense for us not to have two different products trying to do roughly a similar thing, so they were merged. And the story for merging RIA in with the same effort is basically the same thing. What people say they want is a coherent story that is not basically just giving them loads of different trade-offs they have to decide, but is one system that makes sense, is coherent, and we can invest a lot in producing nice samples and guidance for.
When people who are kind of first hearing the words Upshot and Knockout in single page apps, the way I kind of oversimplify, which is not entirely correct the way I say this, but just to kind of get it across, I try to relate Knockout for Silverlight developers to basically the data binding architecture and library that they had with Silverlight or XAML. And then Upshot's kind of like the RIA services that we had before, where you've got your data binding and whatnot on the client with Knockout, and your architecture do all the custom bindings. But then you've got this tool where there's some holes with data binding, not holes, but things it's not meant to tackle. It's not meant to tackle how do I do stuff on the server, how do I communicate with the server. And instead of just using jQuery directly or creating libraries to do change tracking and integrating in RESTful calls, that's a lot of what Upshot does. It smooths out that whole process between the client and the server.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. And although Upshot comes with built-in support for Web API on the server and Knockout on the client, it's not restricted purely to those things. It's extensible at both ends. So if you wanted to connect it to a different kind of server that speaks a different sort of way of describing data, then there's a provider extensibility point down there, so you can plug in your own ways of talking to the server. And similarly, if you decided you didn't want to use Knockout for some reason and you wanted the data to be exposed in a different way, then there's an extensibility point on top there where you can control how the data gets transformed and represented when it is pulled back from the server. So it's just this very useful piece that sits in the middle there and knows how to store changes and synchronize them back.
So Steve, I have, if you don't mind, Jesse, I have two quick questions for Steve since we've got
Please.
Him on here. One question is, would you mind defining quickly what a single page app is, SPA architecture, so people get that? And the second step on that too is, when I've heard that term mentioned, I've seen other developers go, well, I don't develop single page apps, I develop apps for enterprises, they have multiple pages. So could you kind of address that concern too?
Yeah, that's a really good one, actually. And to be honest, I probably should one day sit down and really try to come up with the best possible definition for this, because there probably isn't a single agreed definition. And maybe everybody has slightly different meanings when they say that. But it is becoming a fairly standard term. And so a single page application, when most people say that, means a web application that involves some kind of navigation on the client. That's one of the main themes. So you've probably seen web pages whose URLs have hashes in them, and you can go backwards and forwards and bookmark these hash URLs. And when you're doing that, the browser isn't actually going to the server to fetch any new pages, but is just updating its user interface dynamically, which means that navigation is basically instant, you know, really the same speed as a native desktop application. And then there's the newer HTML5 push state API, which gives you similar functionality, but with a little bit more power to control what the URLs look like. So client-side navigation is one of the main characteristics. And then I suppose I would say client-side UI rendering is the other main characteristic. So being able to dynamically change what stuff is in a list and, I don't know, add multiple tabs to a tab panel or something. You know, just generally being a fully dynamic user interface that doesn't have to speak to the server to change that user interface.
Well, let me be the voice of ignorance. Are you talking about a large page with navigation within it, or are you talking about actually dynamically changing what's on the page based on these bookmarks?
The latter, I would say, certainly dynamically changing what's on the page. Now, how that's implemented is going to vary from one application to another. A good example of this that most people have got some experience with is the Gmail web application. Now, you know that if you've used that, you can navigate around between different folders, and assuming your network connection is decent, it's usually extremely fast because it's not fully reloading the page and resetting its contents completely as you're doing that. It's just, you know, fetching new data from the server and injecting it into the page. So that's a very familiar example. But even that is probably a bit of a hybrid. Now, I don't know their architecture in detail, but my guess is that when you go off to some sort of secondary page like the options screen, I'm guessing that it probably pulls down some additional code and markup at that point, because they probably don't want to load all that stuff up front. So at that point, it becomes a bit of a hybrid, and it's kind of a single page, but it's kind of fetching more data as it goes along. But basically, I suppose they are trying to come up with the architecture that, on average, maximizes the speed of the thing. So they don't ever really want to reset the page and load a new page completely, but possibly they don't want to dump everything you might ever want to see into one page either. So it's kind of somewhere in between there.
So some things I noticed just, you know, using it recently and doing some demonstrations with it was, first of all, it really comes across clearly when you show the network traffic and you know, you bring up a simple app. Actually, when you do file new project, it comes up with a model that steps you through the process of add a controller, do this, do that. Very, very, very quick to get it running. And then when you show the network traffic, it's so small just because all you're passing back and forth is this JSON data. So you're, you know, navigating around or you're adding different items to a list, and the information passed back and forth is so minuscule. And so I actually showed this off in a talk I was doing on mobile development. And while not totally directly, you know, related, it is, because the really tight network traffic is huge, you know, and so you get very instantaneous updates because you're not sending all this information back and forth. And the other thing I noticed there was that you get away from the problem of, okay, we're rendering this on the server, but now we're updating this on the client, but we now don't want to do this, but, you know, and keeping the two in sync because it's all rendered, you know, aside from just pushing the kind of the frame of the page down initially, all the data and updates is handled in the client.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah. I'd really emphasize that mobile point, actually, because that could well be the biggest driver towards this kind of architecture. You know,
that's
most
what,
of
yeah.
Those,
when we have a lot of sessions on this stuff, I get asked a lot about, you know, where's the value in this? And it's not just the cross-browser value. It's the mobility, the phones, the apps that are out there. You can run this library in anything.
Yeah, completely. And generally, if you think about it, most people have now got in their pockets a computer that's more powerful than, you know, your laptop was in 2001 or something, and with a way better browser. So, you know, it's the browser's really is good enough to do sort of desktop class user interface on any modern smartphone, and the CPU is easily good enough. It's just the network traffic that's just still slow. And so if you can reduce it just down to JSON, and if you can do all the navigation on the client, you can produce a really good user experience.
So just diving back a little bit into Knockout just a minute. I mean, to me, the big things I get oohs and ahs from the crowd when I kind of show off what Knockout can do. And there's a lot of plumbing in there, quite frankly. And to be honest with you, a lot of what Knockout does for you is the plumbing. It wires up things that are monotonous and makes things easier. But some of the biggest oohs and ahs I get are that you can integrate with things like jQuery UI pretty easily. Yep. You can write your own custom binding handlers. Usually about 10 minutes into a presentation, people are like, well, that's great that I can show the text value or I can, you know, wire up a click event. But what if I want to do another event like mouse over? You know, can I do that? Well, you can do that through the event binding. Or what if I want to wire up my own event called the Jesse Liberty binding? Well, you can do that too. So the nice thing is...
Wait, the Jesse Liberty binding is not built in?
No, that usually takes down your server. But that's how it is. It's nice. There's a lot of libraries that I've gotten into and I've honestly abandoned because you get 80% of the way there with them. They're great. But then that last 20% is either a brick wall or it's so difficult you don't want to go any further. And yeah. The nice thing about Knockout is Steve's, you know, little brown nosing here. He's done a great job in making it so that you're not dropped off a cliff at the end of it.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I mean, the real reason for this is that a JavaScript library is under some unusual pressures that most kinds of software libraries these days have kind of got over. You know, most libraries these days don't have to count bytes and, you know, minimize their absolute size in every possible way. But JavaScript libraries still do, because the difference between a 15 kilobyte library and a 25 kilobyte library is quite enormous in people's perception. But that's not a lot of lines of code, you know, 10 kilobytes. It's surprisingly few lines. So you've really got to keep the core incredibly tight if you want to create a JavaScript library that people want to use. And in order for it to still be useful, it's got to be very extensible.
And I notice you're getting a lot of requests up on GitHub for new features. And I see your canned response has almost become, that's a great request feature, but let me keep my core really tight.
Yeah, well, that's what the extensibility is there for. You know, if someone's got almost any feature request is something that can be implemented as a plugin. And if it can't be implemented as a plugin, then it might, you know, possibly not be trying to solve the same problem that the core library really is trying to solve. But yeah, of course, we still do want to develop it and extend it and improve it.
And think about plugins. There's a couple that I really like. One's the one by, I think, Roy Jacobs, the mapper.
Yes, that's very nice.
That's a nice one. It's up on NuGet. And then another one, Jim Cowart from, I think he's with Append 2.
Is he? Okay.
Yeah, I think he is. I think he works with Elijah Mann. I was recently introduced to him. He wrote a Knockout external template library, which is great for being able to take your templates and load them dynamically as you need them from another file.
Ah, yes. Yes, that is very nice. And there's also a really interesting one. This is slightly off topic for people using ASP.NET, but there's a guy whose name I can't pronounce, so I won't even try, who's created a Knockout Live plugin that allows objects running inside a Node.js server to be synchronized over the wire in real time using WebSockets with objects running in the browser and then bound to the UI with Knockout. So you've got a real-time server-side programming model that connects over a real-time communications channel to render in real-time on the browser. It's quite amazing, really, to see all that stuff working together.
That's pretty cool.
John Galloway sent a comment quietly that said, wow. And I think that sums up a fair reaction to that.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm sure people on ASP.NET who want to implement something like that themselves could do so, because there's the SignalR library for ASP.NET that gives you similar levels of real-time interactivity with the browser. So once you've got that, you can send any data you want over the wire.
Yeah, and you can find a lot of these plugins out there up on GitHub or CodePlex, or some of them are in NuGet right now. Unfortunately, not a lot of them are in NuGet for Visual Studio, but there's a lot of them actually up there. You've got a couple listed on your site too, some good plugins, Steve.
Yeah, yeah. I try to. I can't really keep track of them. So basically, the wiki on GitHub for the project is just open access. So anybody who's created a plugin can go along and edit that and kind of advertise their wares.
Yeah.
All right. Let me take all three of you back about 10 steps and say, if I'm a developer who's relatively new to ASP.NET and relatively new to serious JavaScript programming, what's my roadmap through here to get to Knockout?
Okay, good question. Well, I don't know. What would you say, guys? Is it best to think about what's happening on the server separately from what's in the client and learn them separately, or does it make most sense to kind of address both simultaneously?
You know, I'd echo what John with the H said earlier, which is start by completely ignoring the server and look at the JavaScript jQuery side, because I think it's very difficult. People tend to merge the patterns together. And I think it's so much more helpful to just think about this is all happening in your browser and then build out and then apply that to the server.
Yeah, you really think about this as the modern world. Everybody's excited about Android, about iOS, about Windows Phone, about all these mobile devices. If you think about, and even HTML5 in general, if we forget about the server, because the server's been around and it's almost like old technology now, you just think about what do I need to get to do to get my code running on a client. I'll figure out the server my own way, because we might all get in a room and write the same kind of client, but we might talk different kind of servers. So really separating that out, I think, is key. As far as what to learn first, I think obviously HTML is a big piece, but you don't have to know HTML5 to do these new JavaScript libraries, not just Knockout, but any of them. You can use HTML4, gasp, to do that. Or, you can get into JavaScript and jQuery, but there's not a lot of information you have to grok to kind of get a head start on a lot of this. It's really just understanding the basics of JavaScript, and I keep saying jQuery because, to me, one of the reasons I ran away from web programming a couple of years ago and got into XAML was because jQuery wasn't around, and I was tired of writing the same lines of code with if blocks before Modernizer and jQuery, trying to figure out which browser I was running against. And a lot of that stuff is a lot easier now.
So, I mean, just to advertise the two other guys who are on here, because they may not do it themselves enough, but John Papa's Plural Site course is, of course, a great thing to start with. And then I have to say the Knockout website, knockoutjs.com, is amazing in terms of immediately presenting what it does. And then there's interactive tutorials right in the screen that very clearly, you look at a tutorial, you enter code, and you see it in the page. And so many libraries, JavaScript libraries, but any kind of library, dump you into a GitHub page, and then you're just kind of left wondering what to do and reading unit tests. The Knockout page is just incredible in terms of, helping get started.
It really raises the bar, you're right, because I tell you, a lot of people go to that Knockout page and they tell me afterwards, or I see them tweeting, they're like, wow, I'm glad you pointed me to that site because now my appetite's really wet. I kind of went through the whole site, went through the tutorials, and about an hour you can do the whole thing. And at that point, you've got a pretty good idea of what Knockout can and can't do for you.
Cool. Well, thank you for pointing that out. Yeah, that's true. Definitely one of the nice things of writing a purely client-side library like Knockout is that you can educate people about it purely client-side. Because there's no server-side piece, it's relatively straightforward to do these kind of interactive tutorials in the browser without people having to learn an IDE or anything. And so, yeah, it was nice to be able to benefit from that happy fact.
Yeah, and I've been telling people who are trying to get into Knockout that if they're new to very, very new to web development, the place to start on this would be on your site in the learning tutorials that you've got up there, which are relatively new. They're only a couple months old. And then after you go through those, to head over to Pluralsight, of course, shameless plug, and check out my deeper course.
Yeah.
Oh, and one other thing, too, is the single-page application that Steve talked about. That's up on ASP.NET. /single-page-application. So I'm sure there's other links to it too, but that has information that's, samples, tutorials, that kind of stuff.
And you gentlemen, yes, will send me all these links. We'll put it up on the page for this podcast.
Of course.
Yep. And yeah, for anybody who's got ASP.NET MVC 4 beta, if you do a file new project in that, you'll see the single-page application template there, so you can get started with that.
I had an aha moment with a developer over the weekend. I was at the South Florida Code Camp, and a couple guys pulled me aside and were asking about single-page apps. And this one developer was really convinced that single-page apps just would never work for him or his company. And his funny thing was he was using Silverlight, building apps with basically a single container and then just popping views inside of a main view. So he had this main view, and he was popping in little subviews and regions. And I said, do you realize that's the same thing that you could do with a single-page app with Knockout? And I started showing him on a whiteboard how this works. And it's like the light bulbs were going on. Because he was so against doing a single-page app. And then when he was done, he's like, I've been doing the same thing for about 2 years now. So it's not like it's a new concept. It's just the idea is to not reload everything every single time that you go to a page.
Absolutely, yeah. By the way, it's not necessary for a single-page application to consist only of one single page. Just to clarify for anybody who's listening who's thinking, like, really? My application's got 2,000 pages in it. It's quite normal to design a single page to encapsulate a whole kind of interactive experience that makes sense to people using your application. So, for example, you might be doing a travel agent site where your agents need to set up a booking or something. So you might have a single page that guides the your staff through the process of setting up the booking and choosing the hotels and the flights and such like that. But that might be a completely separate page to the user registration screen, for instance, which is a different kind of experience that's structured in a different way. And in order for your code to feel a little bit more self-contained, it can be nice to set up separate pages for things that are really separate user workflows. And then you can really just hone in on the user experience of each one separately.
That's a great point. That's one of the reasons I hate the term SPA, because it really makes it sound like you're just writing a single page app that's just a little like a wizard.
Yeah. We sometimes say to people now that single page application means making a single page into an application, not making an application into a single page. So, putting the richness in each place rather than saying you can only have one place for the richness to go.